Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blind Spots. I'm Gail McDonald, your host, and I am very grateful that you are all listening or watching on your platform of choice for podcasts. And I'm so excited to be here today with Colin Smith. And Colin's specialty is listening. And who would think that that is a craft that could truly enhance our lives and our relationships? Colin is the listener, a listening skills specialist with a passion for changing the way the world listens. His listening presence enables individuals to feel heard, to think more clearly, and through learning how to listen more effectively and to transform their business and personal relationships. Colin has an innate ability to deeply, deeply listen, hold space, and develop trust with people. He works privately with individuals, enabling them to express their feelings more easily, address their personal concerns, and to articulate their creative ideas. He works with business teams, facilitating the development of listening and thinking skills to improve business relationships, to be more creative and collaborative, and to increase the level of psychological safety and trust. Colin, welcome to Blind Spots. Thank you for being here with me today and our viewers and listeners. And thank you for the amazing conversation we had even prior to starting the show. So I'm so very excited for our listeners to hear what you have to say about listening. Such an art, such an undeveloped art. So welcome, Colin.
Lovely. Thank you, Gail. I'm always delighted to be with you. So well, thank you.
Thank you. And likewise.
And when I say be with, I really mean be with. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're sitting together mm-hmm. in the same room. Mm-hmm. You're here with me and I'm here with you. I'm there with you. That's mm-hmm. what it feels like. That's what being with is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, so we don't have to physically be with. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. We're over Zoom. We're connected by technology, but yes. Yeah. We're also connected, I believe, mm-hmm. through the quantum field. So mm-hmm. if I really listen, not just with my ears, with my eyes, with all of my senses, you're here with me. And I often say that at this point, this moment, you are the most important person in my life. Mm. You're not, of course, but for this moment,
yeah,
you truly are. And therefore, all my other stuff can drop to the sides and I mm-hmm. can be here with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where I want to take people to that space. But to do it, you've got to experience it first.
Mm. What else can you say about that? To do it, you've got to experience it first.
As we were saying earlier, I could provide you with videos, books. I could to learn how to swim. Mm. You could sit by the side of a pool and watch people diving in and swimming, playing around in it. But at the end of the day, you still can't swim. You've got to get in the water and swim. And what I've learned, and I often say there's an irony in talking about listening, is if you talk about it, fine, people hear it. But when they experience it, what it's like to feel heard, what it's like to think independently and be listened to by someone, they notice it's different. And therefore, they're in a much better position to listen to another, help another person with their thinking, and so on. And so listening is more than doing something, it's actually being a listener. And there's something really precious about being a listener. And we can all be it. So just because I've spent the last, I don't know, 12, 15 years doing this or being the listener, it doesn't mean that I'm any better. It just says I've been doing it longer. But all of us have that capacity to be a great listener. Put your stuff aside, sit down and be with that person.
The comment, we all have the capacity. So, in your experience, Colin, what do you think gets in people's way of being a better listener? Possibly in your line of work, I know in mine, and I've likely said it as well too. Oh yeah, I'm a really good listener. But very few people really listen to the degree that you have described. And so what is it that there's so many variables of, how people do listen, can listen, are capable of listening, don't want to listen. Like, what is it that we're just not listening?
Are you thinking what's stopping us? What's getting in the way of us being good listeners? I think, first and foremost, most people believe they're very good listeners. Unless they're audibly impaired, they're very good hearers or very good at hearing. And people go, but isn't hearing and listening the same thing? And I've proven this many times. If you stop the group at that point and say, okay, it's a great question. What's the difference between hearing and listening? And more than one person will put their hand up and tell you what the real difference is. Essentially, hearing is passive. I don't have to do anything. You and I, deep in conversation in a restaurant, and somebody says, hey, Gail, may not be for you, but they say, Gail, did someone call my name? I didn't hear it. You did. It's about keeping you safe. That's why when you go to a new hotel, you may not sleep so well because you can hear the doors banging, the pipes creaking, the windows rattling, all these different noises. It's the hearing keeps us safe. Listening is intentional. It's the difference between, so I can do it. So I talk a lot about doing experience, having experiences of it. So if we were together in the park, I'd say, okay, just close your eyes and just take it in for a moment. And you go, okay, right. Now imagine you've got ears that will take you right out to the edges. What are you noticing? Oh, yeah, I can hear a plane in the background. Oh, somebody drilling. Okay, now bring it nearer. Bring it in a bit nearer. Oh, I can hear. Yeah, I think I can hear some water. There's a siren. There's something else. Something else. Okay, now bring it even nearer. You go, gosh, I can hear you breathing. There's some bird just really just over there. Or I can hear the wind blowing in the trees. And then I say, okay, now drop that, and just bathe in that soundscape. And they go, oh my goodness, that's really different. We can apply that anywhere, in a meeting, in a restaurant, out in the park, etc. It feels different. And when I've done that with the same piece of music, I've been accused of changing the music at the end. But I haven't. We now are listening, not hearing. So big difference. And when we were talking earlier, you were talking about a client where they'd spent most of the time talking and you spent small most all the time listening. And we often negate listening because we go, well, especially if we think it's hearing, because we don't appreciate what is actually going on inside. So first of all is the stillness, the calmness, the settledness of the listener encourages the speaker to speak. There is a feeling that you're interested. You're following me with your eyes. It's not a staring contest. Soft gaze that shows that you're interested. And even when I go away to think and I come back, you're still here with me. And it's even more powerful in the re when you're with someone, because if I come, you come back from my thinking and you're looking at your watch. Immediately, I think, oh, am I boring? Are we running out of time? Now, what was I thinking? My flow has stopped. So that piece, so there's that. There's the ease, which says we've got plenty of time. There's also the encouragement. You want me to talk. You want me to share. You're interested in where I'm going to go with my thinking. You're not judging me. Your whole being is saying, I'm interested. So there's lots going on. So big difference between hearing and listening. And that is, I think, the biggest reason it gets in the way, is that we think we're very good and we're not. What would I say after that? Don't have enough time. Listening is soft skill stuff. I want to get things done. The reality is, if you listen more, you're going to get things done better and quicker. We don't have to keep coming back and say, what was it you said earlier? I forgot, because I was only hearing and I misheard it. I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening to the real meaning. Husband says to the wife, I'm just going down the pub for a drink. Just fine. Now, did she really say fine, or was there something else there? Was it like fine? Or was it fine? I'm okay. Right? And it's like, if I've listened to it, there's something else going on. And therefore, you've got a chance for a conversation. Yeah, I'm feeling a bit low today. Oh, I didn't realize. Yeah. And that's why when you said I'm going to the pub, it's like, fine, just leave me here. Oh, I didn't realize. You get a chance to talk about it. And so on. So there's many things and lots of distractions, not enough time. All of those are also. But the biggest, I think, is that we think we are good at listening and we're not.
So if we're not aware that we need some brushing up in our listening skills, then we make no real effort to improve upon it. If it's not problematic, then why would we do anything about it?
Agreed.
What I also appreciate what you just spoke about was the hearing and the listening, and the thought that came to mind was the fact that hearing is a sense, like our sense of smell, our sense of sight. Hearing is a sense. It's involuntary. When you describe, the sound out there. And it was interesting, too, what you said about when you're in a hotel and you hear or sometimes don't hear the sounds that are familiar to you. And we moved many, many years ago from a large city. We live near the airport and a highway and a railway, and I slept fine. And then we moved out to a small town. It was in the country and it was so quiet, I couldn't sleep.
Couldn't sleep. It's, yeah.
So there's that distinction about, like, you've made the distinction between the hearing and the listening so clear. And you also mentioned being a good listener, which is a noun. It's a thing. You're a good listener. Listening is the verb aspect, but this might come out a little quirky, but it's not like we can be good hearers. We just hear, and hearing is, it's effortless. We just hear. But it's the listening piece that's critical. And we may have briefly discussed before we came on air here about how it can affect relationships if it's unaddressed over time, be it professional or personal, and listening with our whole being. Like we are being together here right now. And even though it's over Zoom, there's still an energy, and if we pay enough attention by listening with our whole, I've referred to it sometimes as whole heart listening. So it's
Nice.
not just our ears, it's our heart, and opening up that space for people, where they feel safe, and that is a gift. I think it's a gift we can give people. It costs nothing but our time.
Absolutely. We open up, we have a space to open up our hearts. I love it. And I've not heard it quite like that, but that's what happens. When we're in this connection of being with each other, we move from heads and thinking to hearts and feelings. Right? And it feels like that. Not like that. It feels like that. And just two things, just going back on what you were saying. We have this in the same way as we have hearing and listening. We also have the same way as seeing and looking. So if I, and sometimes I get these the wrong way around, but it doesn't matter. So if you say, look out the window, I look out the window. So if you said, look out the window and see the green parrot that's sitting out there or parakeet or whatever it is, I've got to focus. I've got to intend to see that. Otherwise, I'm just seeing the color rather than, oh, there it is. Yeah, I can see it. And the same is true with the other senses as well. And I also have a simple model, which starts at the top, which is talking or talk at. That's what we do or receive. Hearing from, listening to, being with, and be. Most people, I believe, operate in the first two, being talked at or talk at, and hearing from or being heard. That's it. The moment we, that's for me, that's head. The moment we start to make that connection and intentionally listen, we start to open up our heart and the conversation flows. There's no effort involved because what needs to be said gets said. And that's why sometimes we start with a list of questions and the conversation, and it's like, oh, and then it reaches a natural end and it's like, let me ask another question, or another question will arise as a result of that. Just so different. Now, this is how interesting it gets, because now my thinking has gone one way. I can't remember what the question was.
Well, I don't know either, so
I'm
we're
too
great
sorry.
here.
I think it was about how listening affects relationships. I think so that's
Yes,
where.
it was. I think that's exactly what it was.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, over time. You know, it's that
Right.
steady drip,
Yes.
right?
And so I think what happened then is I had a moment of anxiety. It's like, I've no idea where we are. But we neither of us reacted to it. We both went, oh, okay. We settled down and it comes back. And I went, I think it was this. And you went, yeah, that was it. So it's about relationships. Now, what I've noticed in relationships is the simple act of noticing the other person. And this particular guy, Charles Duhigg, who wrote the book on habit, he wrote a book called Super Communications. And he said most people need one of three things, which is lovely because they all begin with H. They want to be heard, they want to be helped, they want to be hugged. Right? And most times we expect the other person to know what we want. So Molly, my wife, will walk in and she will usually say, and this is the point I'm making, is that we've learned this over time. She tells me what she wants. Can I have a hug? Or I just need to get this off my chest. Can you just hear? Or I've got some ideas. I'd really love your help on it. And I can work with those. Or if it's not quite as clear as that, I'll ask the question. She comes in, she starts talking, and I say, first of all, how are you? And she goes, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. I've just got this now going on. I say, okay, now I know where you're at. What's the best for you? What, how can I be most of help to you? And she might say, I'd like you to just listen. Fine. And if I listen in a way with the attention we've talked about, as you did with your client, they'll talk. and they'll talk. And what more? And what more would you like to think or feel or want to say? The reason I'm looking over there, that's where she would sit. We sit, and I turn around from my screen to sit with her so I can give her my attention, physically my attention. And then, actually, I've gone there and there. Yeah, I think I've got the answer. Thank you. And people go, well, I didn't do anything. You did a lot, which is what we were saying earlier. And the more we can have that kind of relationship where sometimes we just have those thinking moments where, for 5 minutes, talk about what you want. It's your thinking. I'm going to give you my attention. And then you switch over and say, you'd think whatever you want to think. So I'm like thinking out loud in the presence of another. That helps. And sometimes we sit over coffee, Molly and I, and just do exactly that. Share what's coming up for us at this moment. And it's extraordinary how the depth of the relationship changes and deepens because we feel connected. And you'll notice it with your clients, those that arrive with you and connect with you, and you create this lovely container. More happens, and it flows. There's no friction in it. It just flows. They trust. It's what we were saying earlier when you were introducing me. It's about it feels safer to be in this space with you. I trust you. You know, and even more so once I knew you'd been on that, what do you call it? The
The change zone.
change zone. So I know who you are now, right? So it's like, I don't have a problem, right? This is not someone new. This is someone I've spent some time with before. So it makes it easier to trust. And I think that we're starting to recognize that transactional relationships don't work. They don't last time, right? People come back to you because they trust you. It may not be next month, the month after. They keep coming back. Because also you don't hold on to them, as in, I'm desperate, I'm desperate. But it's like, I know you know me, I'm here for you. And they know how they're going to be treated when you come, when they come back. It's huge. If we could, my sense is, if we could, if everyone in the world listened 1, 2, 3% better, we'd have more harmonious relationships, just like that. That's how I think simple this is, and how much of a superpower this is.
I agree with you 100%, Colin. It really does make the world go round, a better place. So I've picked up on two things. You were speaking of Molly coming into the room and how you were interacting, and I do sometimes wonder why, and maybe the answer is obvious. I'm certain you have something wise to share about what this is, what the dynamics are. But oftentimes with family, it's different than with work or casual friends when it comes to communication overall. And I can't really put my finger on some of the whys about that. Like, why do we tend to communicate so differently with our families or listen differently to our families than we do with others?
I think there's an awful lot going on. One is that we can keep friends, business at a distance if we want. With close family members and intimate partners, they're seeing everything. They're with you all of the ups and downs of being a human. And I think there's a huge opportunity for us to each create more and more of a safe space for the other one to be more and more vulnerable. Because if someone shares something that's really deep, what how they respond to that makes all the difference. And as a coach, I'll use the example as a coach, if you're engaged with someone in a conversation and they share something that's really deep and challenging for them, they get a bit emotional, they start to well up, get a bit red faced maybe, and you won't, I know you won't do this, but you start to get anxious about them, and you don't like this. This is uncomfortable space for you, and so you go, "Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Obviously, we're on a bit dangerous ground. Let's change the subject. Let's get back to the reason we were here, and we're talking about this project, and so on and so on." Right? They've learned a lesson. Do not bring this stuff up in front of you. Right? So we. I often use the analogy of the, we call them the trestle tables here, but they're very flimsy table that you would normally put plates and some sandwiches on. Right? You wouldn't put a wedding cake on it, right? Because it might collapse, right? So a lot of people are like these trestle tables. They're easy to collapse. What people want, I believe, is someone like a wall. Whatever you push against the wall, it will stay there. So I've had people literally break down in front of me, and I'm still there with them. I'm not going to run away. They've exposed or shared something that's really probably the worst thing they've ever done. I'm still there. And you can see the relief on their face when they can do that. So in relationships, you're losing armor all the time. And so they see you who you really are. And if they, what's that phrase? Anything you say may be taken down and used in evidence against you. If that happens in a relationship, you know, yeah, you said this. And it's like, oh, I wish I hadn't said it. I said it because I was opening up. You're now choosing to use it as a weapon. I'm not going to reveal that. So I shut more and more of myself down. But if they're able to say something like, "My goodness, gosh, that must have been challenging for you," or whatever, 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 and they're supportive of you, or even to, as Simon Sinek talk, just sit in, or Brené Brown sits in the mud with you. The relationship is deeper already. It means I can share more with you. It also means they're going to share more with you. And so we move from this very transactional relationship to another level, another level, another level, where I can come in, disrobe metaphorically, and go, "This is what's happened." They go, "Okay." And then, "How can I help? You know, do you want a hug? Do you want to be heard? Do you want to those that sort of thing?" And the relationship changes. And you can shift it from one where you don't have good conversations to one when you do. And so you're beautifully, just to say, you're beautifully demonstrating listening. I feel you're with me. I'm feeling heard, and you've not said you have in your own way. You've said some things, but I'm feeling heard by what I'm saying, by how you're being with me. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, how much time do you have? We could be here till
Yeah, they
well,
could.
pretty you're in London, so pretty soon it's your bedtime, so I need to be mindful of that. Well,
I don't.
maybe not bedtime,
No,
but
I know it's late afternoon, that's for sure. But yeah,
so
all is
it's
well.
supper time, at least, or I'm not sure how you refer to it out there, but wow, I don't even know where to start, actually, Colin. But there's one thing that came up briefly and then it went away and now it's back again. And it was back to the conversation with Molly when she came in the room and said, and I don't know why I kind of got stuck on this one, but you had mentioned that she said, I just need you to hear me. And I'm wondering if you have, like in your relationship, I'm sure of a few years, right? If you establish this way of being and listening with each other, and when she said, I just need you to hear me, as opposed to, I need you to listen to me, was there a difference, or was it just something that had sort of no real sort of, indication of anything that she required from you? But did she just need to hear you, or did she need you to listen? And oftentimes in relationships, one person has a tendency to be the problem solver. And I've said to my husband multiple times, I just need to get this out. I don't need any solution because I'm not looking for a solution. So I was just wondering about how you positioned that when you said, Molly said, I just would like you to hear me.
Yeah, I think it's going back to the what he says in that book. Do you want to be heard, helped, or hugged? And so she's able to communicate that she needs to be heard, which really is saying to me, I'd like you to listen. So I think that's the joining bit. But I have to admit, I do have what I would call my own kryptonite. Right. So the way I get undone is if I'm busy in here and my mind is occupied with something I'm reading or writing or whatever, and Molly comes in and starts talking to me, I'm going to miss the first part of it because I'm not present. So I use this as an analogy of two people. Usually this is what's going on in organizations and in relationships. No one is listening. One can be the anchor or the radiator or the light, and the other one will arrive at it. So now, when Molly arrived, she was here, a little bit like this. I'm somewhere else. And so it took me a few moments to realize to come to this place with her. I had to stop what I was doing, turn around. And I missed some of the original cues in terms of what she wanted. And I think, and it may be a masculine thing, I don't know. There is that fix it bit for us, like your husband. And so I started to give her some answers. And rightly so, she got cross because she didn't want answers. She wanted to be heard. And so once it was like, oh, yes, I'm sorry, I've missed it. I've realized that and we understand that now because we've had the experience of it. You've got to have the experience of not her not feeling heard for me not knowing I needed to hear or listen. So, okay. So more now, it's give me a moment to, let me just give me a moment to arrive so I can turn around. Right. Now I'm with you. And so another example, when I switch between meetings, I usually go to the bathroom and wash my hands, even if it's just for a moment. That lets that past go, settles me, opens me, ready for the next conversation, so that I can be fully present with them. I'm almost like washing what's happened. So really, I think it's one of those iterative processes that you start to work on together. Ah, okay. And help each other. And because the deeper that communication, the more we can say, actually, this is what's come up for me, is you just barged in, expected me to listen straight away, and I wasn't. And I own that. Right. So there's some learning for her, learning for me. And it's like, just give me a moment. Right. Now I can be present. And sometimes with children, as they get older, if you say to them, Daddy, Daddy, I need you now. And you go, well, can you give me 5 minutes? And they go, yeah, I can do that. But the deal is 5 minutes, you've got to be there. And with them, 100%. You can't let them come back in 15 minutes and go, "Daddy, you said you were going to be here in 5 minutes and you've not." That's bad. Right? Communicate to them, teach them how to behave. So I don't know if that's answered your question.
Oh, and then some, absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing up children because, as an adult educator, it sometimes was very easy to and I hesitate to use the word assume, but some of the behaviors displayed, and it was just an observation, no judgment about whether it's good or bad, but sometimes it's easy to see people as adults that were perhaps listened to and those who were not. And what I love about the innocence of children is that they will call you out.
Yes, 100%.
And then if that happens over a period of time, does that child go elsewhere? Is the trust eroded as a parent? And it is tough, particularly, I mean, in our day, Colin, I say our day because I'm assuming we're fairly close in age, that there wasn't the insanity of the busyness of the world. And technology, of course, plays a role, and
Agreed.
the economy plays a role. Like, it all plays a role. Nothing is ever one thing.
Agreed.
But my mom didn't work. She was a stay-at-home parent, and we had time to do things together. And did she listen to me effectively all the time? Absolutely not. But she was present, and I can't remember ever feeling like I wasn't acknowledged or cared for or that type of thing. But it is difficult. But how do then we carve out the time as we're raising children now with all the distractions? And it's got to be a must. And how might we weave that in? And you may have heard of or even read James Clear's Atomic Habits. If you can't sit down across from one another and have a good conversation where there's active, meaningful listening, can you talk when maybe, well, if your kids do the dishes with you, that didn't happen in my house. But if you're driving them somewhere, rather than making it like a big deal, like how can that habit of having conversation be woven in? And even when our kids were little, like just laying down with them at night, maybe reading them a story, and then just laying there with them for a few minutes. Like, it's truly amazing how they just feel. I mean, you're the parent. They need to feel safe with the parent and need to feel like they can trust them. But these things are so, they don't have an immediate impact, which is why I do wonder if that can be problematic over time. If there was an immediate impact, maybe we would pay attention to it more quickly or more attentively. Same with corporate family relationships. And something is coming up for me about corporate. I'm interested in how you, because you do work with groups, is that what I'm understanding as well? So, how might you describe a day in the life of Colin working with a group of people on listening?
First of all, go back to a couple of things that you said about the children. I think that's really, really important. I think the use of silence, the use of just being with them, like you read them a story, they're in bed, they're in their cot or wherever, and you're probably in bed actually, rather than a cot, and you're just with them. And then they say things. Again, back to what we were saying earlier, how we respond is really important. One of the, I mean, my daughter particularly shared a lot of things to both my ex-wife and myself, but the biggest one And I didn't even realize, because she's a children's nurse now in A&E, and I never realized that the reason she chose that to be a nurse was because of the way she felt that the NHS here, our hospital system, let down my dad. And she told me when we were in the car, sitting, not looking at each other, looking ahead. She just
Yes.
came out with it in the silence and the space that we had in the car. And I, from all the things I've seen and heard, suggests that sitting, either sitting in the car traveling or walking side by side,
Yes.
is really helpful for the younger ones, and particularly teenagers, because it's a little bit uncomfortable and they're a bit quirky, a bit clunky with their language and things. You know, so I think that's really important. And one book I would certainly recommend for anyone is this lovely book here by my
Oh,
friends Sophie, Sophie Stevenson and Rachel Day, called Raising Thinkers. And one of the things she says in it is that when a child kicks off, metaphorically, there's something going on. It's missing something. And I went, adults are no different. When an adult kicks off, there is something going on. And it brings, you know, brings it round to exactly what you're saying. I think it is that drip, 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 drip. I'm not heard, not heard, not heard. Why should I ever bother hearing others? You get, yeah, it builds like that out equally. And the word you use when you were receiving from your mum was acknowledgement. Basically, I've noticed you, Gail. Whatever it is, I've seen you. And sometimes, sadly, children disrupt the family so that they are acknowledged, so they are seen. They behave badly to be seen, because that's the only time my dad notices me. Right?
Precisely.
Right? And then you go, that's not different to work. It's not different to relationships. You see it, you watch it, and you go, you can see what's going on. So that's that bit. And I do remember the question, which is about the workplace. So typically, the way it works is, and it all stems from the starting place, some of the things we've already touched on. People go, there's something about this listening that's interesting. Come and do a session for us, for a group. And it might be 40 people, 100 people, doesn't matter. What I'll try and do within that is to give them some activities that get them realizing that A, they don't listen, B, they're not thinking for themselves, etc. So, two questions. When was the last time somebody said to you, what do you think, and mean it? Or when was the last time you felt really heard? And share that with each other. So they get into conversations about it. They're talking to each other, listening to each other, they're interested. Now, what's the freshest thinking? So I can go through an hour and a half session with very little material, but lots of activities. Then they come to the conclusion, actually, we're not very good at listening. How can we improve our listening? Then you can start to take them through the journey. It's a personal journey, first of all. As I said earlier, I'm 100% responsible for the energy I bring into this room. I'm also responsible for what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. It's up to me. And there's a lovely guy I see on, I don't know, one of the platforms, a guy called Julian himself. He gets a pair of sunglasses and he says to the group, insult my glasses. And they go, oh, don't like the color. Gold's a bit this or whatever. I don't like the shape. How are the glasses? They're fine. Now, compliment the glasses. They'd say nice things about it. Has the glasses changed? No. The same with you. You can hear all this stuff, but I'm okay with me. So the journey starts here. The more we can listen to ourselves, sit with ourselves more and more, understand, let it come up, let it come up. Oh, then we're more and more in a position where we can listen to each other. And when we can listen to each other, then we start to build their relationships. And we realize that actually we're all human beings doing the best we, I believe, doing the best we can. So in spite of the behavior of some people, I know it's a weird thing to say, they're doing the best they can.
I love you said that.
Right? Mm-hmm. And something I shared quite recently on another podcast, a friend of mine, Joe Berry, we had an episode in the UK in the 80s. We were involved with the Irish, they call them the IRA,
mm-hmm.
and the British, right?
Yes, yeah.
Bad times.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Conservative Party conference in Brighton, a bomb was placed, huge bomb went off. At least one person was killed, which was Joe Berry's father, Sir Anthony Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person was convicted of that bombing, a guy called Patrick McGee. And Joe wanted to make sure that her father's death was not in vain. She was only 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
And she went and eventually was able to meet with Patrick. So here she was meeting for the first time the person who had murdered her father. And for the first hour and a half, he justified why he did what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then she stopped him.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something along these lines. You know, Patrick, if I had had the life you've lived, it's entirely possible I would have done what you've done.
That's and powerful.
And he said, her empathy disarmed me. So she was able to see the human being that was there in front of her, not yeah. Patrick McGee, not the murderer,
right?
The human being, the equal human being,
mm-hmm.
doing its best.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, lovely, they've had a professional relationship where they've traveled the world talking about peace and reconciliation.
Wow.
Right? And he never backs off from, I did murder her father.
Yeah.
So that's my sense of it, is that when we can see the human being in everyone,
mm-hmm.
everything changes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, whatever color skin, whatever religion, whatever this, there's still this beautiful human being mm-hmm. there. In the same way as I am, as you are, as Susan is, mm-hmm. her son is, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
They're all beautiful humans. And mm-hmm. if we notice that, then how can I not love that person? Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing to say, but it's our friend Andy Scarantino from the Friendship Bench.
Mm-hmm.
She said with me one time, she said, it's like being in this state of love. And what she meant, I think, was this container of love. That's powerful. It's not in love.
Yeah.
It's different. It's mm-hmm. in this container or state of love, as she called it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, yes, that makes sense. That's what I think we sit in now. We're sitting in now, this state of love.
You had mentioned that when we first met today, about creating the container and that listening takes on the shape of whatever it becomes. And
yeah.
now hearing you say that again, I've embraced it even deeper, and it's just so meaningful. And it truly is about listening, Colin. Like, to me, that is the simplicity of it. Because if I hear your story, and not everybody's willing to share, and that's okay, because sometimes it's very, very painful.
For them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But if we're willing to listen to what they're willing to share up to that point, then maybe it opens more room for more dialogue.
Yeah.
But once we understand that person, we get a greater view of possibly why they did what they did, why they believed what they believed. And the word I'm thinking of is compassion. And Susan had shared with me that to her, compassion is empathy plus practicality. And I've always embraced that. It's so we need to empathize, we need to try and understand. And yet, as Susan would say, at what point then do we support with bringing practicality into the equation should the opportunity arise? It doesn't with everybody. And I'm certain that you've had these situations because you're in this role of being the listener where you're in a park on a bench or sometimes even in a long supermarket lineup or something, and someone just spills the beans. They're just at that point, and I just listen. And then the comment, and I think you and I chatted about this earlier as well, is that, wow, I can't believe I just told you all that. And that was one thing out of many when I was considering becoming a life coach, was that random people talk to me all the time. Actually, I left one job. I was with a bank, and my clients, I was customer service, but they would wait. And I would hear about, the husband's health problems and the kids' problems, and all they're doing is making a deposit. And this is funny. Now that I think of it, there were some complaints made because the other service folks were they were not happy with the fact that my customers would wait and they'd want to come to me, etc. And I thought, you know what? I don't think this is the place for me. And so small snippets of those experiences made me think about how can I better serve by listening to people rather than being in a shopping in a lineup in a mall or whatever, or in a bank. I'll just do this for a living. So what I'm curious about is how Colin got to be like what drew you to making making this your vocation, like because it's been, I think you said 12, 15 years you've been doing this. How did you give birth to that?
As you would expect me to say, picking up on a couple of things that you've said,
Okay.
beautiful, and you're for me, listening to you about the story of the bank and why you left, understand you go, this is the wrong place for me,
Right.
right? What a great leader would have said to those who complained, what are you doing? Or rather, what are you not doing? Or what is Gail doing that's creating a space for customers to wait in the line to complain or whatever it was they were going to do? And you should be doing more of that. Because
That's what I
then
thought.
you, right? In fact, you just go, ah, okay, right. They're more interested in that than this. They're more interested in transactional behavior than relational behavior. And the reality is, and it's shown in many, many places, the more relational connections we have as a business, the better we're going to be, right? It takes
Yes.
more effort, it takes more time, but the longevity of the business, the customers coming back and coming back, people move with the person. Right. It was as simple as that in many occasions. It's gone, no, they moved to there. I'm gonna go there. But you've been a customer of us for 10 years. Yeah. But they're there now. If I've got a problem, I know she'll take care of it. And she'll do it with grace, etc. Second question was about the empathy bit and compassion. Yes, I've had similar situations. The best example is my daughter, children's nurse, A&E. Sadly, many times she's has cause to try and resuscitate a child. Sadly, sometimes they're unable to resuscitate the child. Now, she's not responsible for going in and explaining to the parents what's happened, but she goes in afterwards to explain what they're going to do now, which is where you were placing this. So the first thing she will do is she will, in her own way, let them know that she feels, she can never feel what they feel, but she can understand the feelings that they're having. So sometimes she gets teary. She will often hug, right? But then, and Susan is absolutely, in my opinion as well, absolutely right, is she now has to step back and explain to them the things that we now need to do for your child, such as we take the handprints, the footprints, the locks of hair. We've got to do a number of other things, blah, blah, blah. We've got there's tubes and things and all those, etc. So she gently takes them through what needs to happen. That's compassion, as you were rightly picking up. So the answer to the question that you posed, really I've had, as we were talking about, sort of been around for a little while. So I talk about I'm in the third half of my life. So the first part was in computers when they started. I understood about how computers work and how computers connected. Second job or second path was in a consultancy where I learned more about people, how they worked and how they connected. And then, believe it or not, with a lady called Julie Bryant over coffee, and she said, "You do realize you're very good at listening." What? I had no idea what listening was. And as she explained it, I went, oh, that would explain so many things in the past. So I joined the dots. And so I came away really excited. We also came up with the idea of the listener there and then. The listening coach was considered, no, it has a fix it bit in it. The listening coach is fix it. The listener. Yeah, I like that. So it's a brand, it's something I've got to live with. As my darling wife would say, you call yourself the listener. Right? Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then I wrote some notes down and I sent it to a good friend and he said, it sounds just like Nancy Klein's work, Time to Think. Right? This where is it? This good lady here. Oops. Time to Think.
Gotta
This
write
book's
that one
20,
down.
right? This one's about 20 years old. She created a second one called More Time to Think.
Oh, love it.
Right? And there's an even better one, which is the more recent one, which is about 2 years old. And I love the title of this, The Promise That Changes Everything.
Yes. Love
Right?
it.
And she part of the reason she says that is that if you're in a conversation with someone and you're saying to them what in fact this little card says, what do you want to think about? And if I've asked you that question and I promise I will not interrupt you, because we talk in waves and pauses. Waves and pauses. Sorry, waves of thinking and a pause. Waves of thinking and a pause. Typically, what happens is as we're coming down this part of the first wave of thinking, the listener, or rather the hearer, has already decided what they want to say and they're rehearsing it. So they've stopped listening and they're waiting for you to draw breath. You've experienced this. And the moment you stop, they're in. And I don't really care what you're talking about, because it could be quite emotional. This is what I'm going to say. It's awful.
It is.
If you give a bit more space, and you demonstrated it to me, and I've demonstrated it to you, you're still thinking in the pause. And then you go again. And it might be a small one, it might be a big one, and then you come back again. And then there's a natural stop. You stop. And that's when you can ask, and what more? And then they smile and they do it some more. But she said that when we listen this way, it feels like love. And I think what she means is like in that state of love.
Yes.
So I then wrote to my friend. He said, this sounds just like that. And I went, oh my goodness, I've got that book. I didn't, because I bought it, but thrown it away or given it away, because why do I want to know about thinking? So I bought the book and the second book, and I started reading them and thought, oh my goodness, this is exactly where I want to be. And so I've had two separate development programs with the Time to Think people. And one of them was this lady, Sophie, here. So I've done some training in that space. So that's a key element of what I do. The rest of the stuff is all the reading I've done and all the thinking and all the experiences I've had. And to finish the other question you asked, when they've realized, organizations, they realize they don't know how to listen. So they bring me back for more in-depth work on listening, or separate coaching for people to do one-to-one coaching on listening, feeling heard, thinking for themselves, those sorts of things, particularly departmental leaders. How do I get the best from my people? Well, start listening to them.
Yeah.
That would be an awesome start.
Yeah. Yeah. Best place to start.
Yeah. And yeah. Anyone who knows me is I'm constantly learning. And the point you made earlier, space to open up our hearts. I've got that. I've written it down, because that's a new nuance to it. So it's another way to explain some of the things I do. So it's always learning.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more on the learning part. I love learning. And a colleague of mine said this, that the more he learns, the more he realizes he doesn't know. Like there's so much more to learn. And as I shared with you in our pre-show chat about, you know, reading books on like Rutger Bregman's Humankind, going way back, like into the more primitive times of life and human nature and human behavior. And then even from a neuroscientific point of view, like just knowing how our minds were formed and how our brains work. And it just, for me, it just develops more questions to which then I get to think about and better serve my clients.
Beautiful.
And know when I'm on and when I'm off and where I need to tighten it up. And because as a coach, listening is critical. That is what coaching, I mean, coach and listen, it's synonymous. And when you say, you know, that like the more senior leaders, it's like, just listen. But listen with intention, listen with your heart. There will be, and you know, to sort of think about I don't know if the end result is the right way to put it, but the results that can come from people feeling more validated and heard, productivity increases, turnover can be reduced, and that has an effect on profitability. But again, it doesn't happen overnight, so it needs to be something that's consistent, maintained, checked in with. You know, maybe a performance review every quarter would be more effective than every year. Just thoughts, ideas, who knows,
right? Agreed.
So Colin, there's one more thing that I'm sensing that our audience might be interested in, and I'm glad you mentioned that you were in computers, because it wouldn't have probably come up for me. So thank you. Is how has, well, COVID did influence our need for virtual meetings. So is there anything that you could, or what could you share with our audience about how to perhaps manage more effective meetings online, because it's such a different environment rather than in person.
Are you thinking about how to make them more effective, or how to make them more relational, those sort of things. Which aspect are you curious
Well,
about?
might I say some of each, a little
Okay.
both? Yeah, would that be fair?
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So my thoughts on it at this moment is we are desperate to be seen and to be heard. And I think we've always had that. And to some extent, before the advent of, let's say, mobile technology and laptops, then typically gathering around the coffee machine, typically in meetings before the meeting started, we talked to each other because there was nothing else to do. So we would kind of, it became the norm. Now we turn up with our technology and we're quite happily working away, even in this is a face-to-face type session, working away. Hey, I'm busy. Don't interrupt. And actually what they're doing is they're hiding. I'd rather be occupied and busy than revealing a little bit of me. Okay. So in it's similar-ish, except that you can't see that I'm typing. We might hear that I'm typing, which is why we go mute or we don't put our face on the screen. Because I'm actually working and half listening. Well, not listening, hearing. Because so many meetings could be carried out by sending a video and an email. Right? So now I've got to listen to this, and I can normally listen to a video at twice the speed. So record what you want to tell me, put it out. From Nancy Klein's Time to Think work, when you put the agenda out, put it out early and ask, instead of having statements, have questions. Because when you get it early, you start to generate ideas in your head. When you come into the meeting, I'm going to hear from all of you, but also, first of all, I want to know what's going, as an opening question, what's going well for you? I'm genuinely interested. We are genuinely interested in what's going on. Because if it's done well, I get to share a little bit of things that are going on for me. Actually, I'm finding it a little bit tough. My mum's not very well. I'm having to travel back and forth. So I'm not as, I'm a bit off the pace. Got it. Okay. We hear that. Is there anything we can do to help? Little things like that. Somebody said that meetings tend to be very clinical. They are just, what's the, what is it typically? The rag, isn't it? Red, amber, green on the project. Da, da, da. Jeff, what about you? Jenny, you, blah, blah, right, done. Right, next, off, and they're off. And these people are working from home and they feel completely isolated. So why don't we have separate opportunities for meeting each other one to one? What's going on for you? Not about work. How do we have, what's going on for you, Gail? You know, I've seen you a couple of times and, you know, you're on, it looks like you're on schedule, but there's a bit of me thinking, are you okay? Thank you for asking, Colin. I'm feeling pretty rough, etc. So I think that would help in a bigger group, make sure that everyone gets heard. You know, so I run on a regular basis every month, groups where we do listening matters. Sorry, I call it listening matters, but it's listening circles. We run listening circles on a subject. And so we make sure everyone gets a chance to speak. And if, right, so it's, you talked earlier about going back into sort of prehistoric times and indigenous tribes. They sat in circle. That's the only way they found out. And if I wasn't there, I'm not going to belong. And I'm genuinely interested what each of you have got to say. And if I've got nothing to say, pass on to the next person. And that's okay too. And so the opportunities, it's like the, I think Simon Sinek posed it. He said, CEO goes into the board and he says, guys, we got a problem. This is what I think we should do. What do you think? You know what the answer is going to be. Great idea, boss. Great idea. Yeah, we'll have that. It's easy. Slopey shoulders, no responsibility, no accountability. But if he turns up and says, I've just found out we got this, this is the problem. It's this, this, and this, and this. I've employed all of you people for your brains as well as your attitude and all those good things. I want to know what each of you think about this. And in fact, before we start, I'm going to pair you off so you can talk to each other about how you feel, how you think about this problem. Then we're going to come back in a circle and I'm going to get your best, freshest thinking now. And we might do two rounds of it and get the answers. And it might be that the best answer happens to be the one that you arrive with. That's fine. Give them the praise. Yeah,
Simple.
right. Right. So all of those things are moving it from what I would call a transactional level to a relational level. The people matter. People really do matter in an organization. You know this. You've seen it from the inside, right? You had it, the experience in the bank. Actually, our customers don't really matter. We don't matter. We're just numbers, numbers in it. Yeah. So the more we can engage each other, even more so because we're not together all the time. You know, we're not hanging out at lunchtime. We're not hanging out over coffee. We're not hanging out after. We're all off somewhere else. And we crave connection,
We too. Me
right?
too.
We really, really, really want it, but we are frightened of it. And so I'd rather send you a message that I can show you that I'm okay because I'm comparing my inside with your outside. And it's never going to match, and I'm always going to be worse off. So I will hide this. I will curate my image. And so the last thing I want to do is have somebody come and see me and ask me questions. But actually, I'd really love it when you do. It's a real long answer. Sorry.
That's okay, but I think that last that you did just made it so perfect because I'm sitting here thinking, oh my goodness, you need to come back at some point because I've got so many other things that I would love to hear your opinion on. I think people need to listen to you again. Well, they can always watch the podcast over and over, but there's so many other things, Colin, that could be discussed that are of such great value. And I think the last question I would have for you is for anyone that has listened to this and decided that, well, maybe I'm not the best listener. How could I be more aware of it? What could I do? What And this might be difficult, but what would you tell them to just support them getting started?
One is either give me a call, send me an email.
Oh, perfect.
Right? Second would be send me a mail and say I'd like to participate in one of your Listening Matters events. They're free. They last an hour. And I'm arranging at different times of the different days in the week, but they're always 4 o'clock in the afternoon UK time, which means anyone in the US is covered. Where you get a chance to experience it. The other is if you, whatever I may, it's like going to the gym, and you talked about this. The more you learn, the more you realize how much more there is to learn. So the worst thing you can do when you go to the gym is to try and do this flat out for 2 hours and think that that's going to help. It doesn't. Go there for the first, in my opinion, if you've never been to the gym, go there for the first 6 weeks and just learn obviously about what the equipment is and how, and just play, just enjoy yourself. Don't push it. Get your body used to moving. And so I would say that would be true. I'd say do things, little things first, like for example, the moment your partner asks for your starts talking to you, don't try and fix it. Keep your mouth shut, keep your hands under yourself and ask them to say some more. Tell me more. That's interesting. Tell me some more. Definitely don't try and fix it. And don't be surprised when they go, oh, I've got it. Lovely. Thank you, Gail, for listening. Right? So that'd be one. What would be another one would be, that's such an easy one, is it all about them. So when you say, oh, goodness, this has just happened. Oh my goodness, have I got a better story than that? Right? This happened to me, and you go, oh, all right. So when they say something like that, inquire more about it. Gosh, that sounds really challenging. Tell me about it. Oh, thank you. If only somebody would listen to me. And there you are, you're listening to them. So there's a couple of things that people could do straight away, and it's easy. Third one would be when your partner comes home, or your child, and it takes a little bit of doing with the child. So 5 minutes each, right? I'm going to ask you to talk, literally, tell me, what do you want to think about? And whatever it is fine. And I'm going to give you my full attention. Then we switch it round, and I'm going to tell you about my day or whatever I want to think about. And at the end of it, and this is the lovely bit, is appreciation. Right? You, like me, and everyone else has had loads of feedback. Feedback is about what you do, whether you're good at it, bad at it, do less of, do more of. Right? And usually, if you've had feedback, the only thing you remember is what I wasn't very good at.
Sadly.
So it's about performance, it's about what you do. Rarely do we get the chance for appreciation. And appreciation is about who you are. And it's always good. You wouldn't appreciate somebody who does something bad, right? I appreciate hearing your negativity today. Right? And when you offer it, it's done with the word, your name. One thing I appreciate about, so today, Gail, one thing I appreciate about you is it's the space that you've created for me to sit here with you. And all that you ever have to do, the other person does. Thank you. That's it. Feel it, bring it in, thank the other person. And we don't do that enough. So if
True.
you could, so another thing I would then add is just offer a word of appreciation for your child, for your husband, for your wife, your brother, whatever it is, or your colleague at work. Doesn't have to be, don't think about it beforehand. Whatever comes up. Molly was away once, and every day I sent her a note on the, we did WhatsApp. One thing I appreciate about you today is this. She loved it. Right? And
Simple
it's a nice
things.
habit. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I really feel that we could all do more of that. I was walking my dog a while back, and this young fellow on a bike just whipping by. He was on the opposite road behind me, and we just said, "Oh, hey, hi." And I said, "Hey, have a good day." And he said, "Don't have a good day, have a great day." And I went, wow. Like, it just really made my whole day. So it's so simple and yet so often overlooked. So, and I would like to say thank you for thanking me for the space. I would also th like to thank you for showing up in the space.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure, Colin. And like I said, my head is very full right now. And
Yes.
you might be hearing from me in a few more months, if that works for you.
Yeah, anytime, Gail. We can have another chat. Happy to.
Thank
Whether
you
it's to
so
do with the
much.
podcast or not, it doesn't matter. Very happy to
Sure.
have another
Oh, well,
chat.
thank you. That is wonderful for sure. With your contact information, I will make sure that's posted on the YouTube channel. And for anyone else who might be listening, that'll be on LinkedIn, or you can just hop on YouTube and get Colin's contact info. But just to confirm your address, your email is colin.smith@dexteritysolutions.co.uk.
Yes.
Correct. And then dexteritysolutions.co.uk is your website. So we'll make sure we can get that out to whomever. So,
And I
yeah.
will be changing sometime later this year, early next year, to a different website, which would be listeningmatters.co.uk.
Oh, perfect.
So
I love
it's
it.
more aligned with the work I do these days.
Okay. Yes,
And yeah.
yes. And we can also find you on LinkedIn, Colin D. Smith. So that's
Exactly.
easy, right? All right,
Exactly.
my friend. I can't thank you enough. And I'm sure we'll see you around, even on the friendship bench. And I do hope that some folks that have listened and really taken it in and listened, that they will gain some benefit and it will enhance whatever part of their life that they need to be, be focusing on. So thank you so much, Colin.
Thank you. Thank you,
Have a
Gail.
really wonderful
Lots of
rest of your
love.
evening. Thank you. Love you
All right.
back. All right.
Take
Take
care.
good
Bye-bye.
care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.